We have had a wonderful, wonderful day. And I hope that your heart has been blessed by the ministry of the word today and ministry of song. I don't know if I have the easy part or the hard part of finishing up on a day like today, but I thought the best thing that we could do was to look at the book of Proverbs as we finish our series this Sunday on the family. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." You know, it's amazing the privilege that we have as children. The question that we're asking tonight is, do we want the hard work of training up a child or the heartbreak of them choosing their own way? Maybe you recognize the lower picture there, a young lady that was in the news in recent years, Rachel Canning, who sued her parents for school tuition and emancipation and lost her case. But she broke the heart of her parents, as we can see in that photograph. And we don't want that to happen as parents. We have a great responsibility with our children. We all are going to fail. We all are going to need to be picked up. We all need the encouragement of God's word. Children are a wonderful, wonderful blessing. There was a lady who was sitting in the doctor's office, a mother with her little girl. She was trying to entertain her, and she found a Bible storybook with pictures in it. And she started flipping through the book, and the mother would point to a picture and ask the little girl if she knew what story that was. And imagine the mother's delight as her daughter identified Noah and the ark, Moses and the bulrushes, and the three Hebrew children. And the mother noticed that there were two elderly ladies who were closely watching them. And of course, mom is swelling with pride as her daughter is doing so well. So she decides to turn to the very front of the picture book. And she points at the very first story in the Bible. And she says, "Honey, who are these people?" The girl got a frown on her face, trying to think and figure out. And she replied, "I don't have any idea who that woman is, but that man is George of the Jungle." It's amazing what kids say and what they do. I remember, as a little boy, I left the church service one evening, and I had the delight of sharing this in chapel a couple of weeks ago and enjoyed watching the children with big eyes like saucers, and some of the teachers too. I think I was probably in about, maybe second grade, and I left the auditorium. I told my mom I had to use the restroom. And so when I walked into the restroom, I saw my friend in there. And Mark was a very innovative young man. As I walked in, he wasn't standing at the sink. He was standing on the sink, which of course would grab the attention of any second grade boy. Why is his friend standing on the sink? And I watched as he jumped from the sink, and the stalls were right across from the sink, and the stalls had a bar across the top of them, and he would jump and grab on that bar and swing across to the commode. Now, for a second grade boy, that's an adventure, and it's one that you want to take part in. And so I watched him do it, and lucky for us, there were two bathroom stalls, so we could do it together. And so we were swinging away, just having fun. And I remember as I jumped from the commode to the bar and I was swinging out toward the sink, out of my peripheral vision, the bathroom door opened. And in walked the head usher, Sanford Broughton, and my mother. And have you ever had those moments where life goes into slow motion? And I don't know if that's good or bad, but you definitely remember it. And you cannot change anything that is happening. And life went into slow motion as I was swinging to that sink, and I couldn't change a thing. Now, that night, there was a child training session at home. And it wasn't touching the palate. It was touching another part of my body. And a wise man once said this, it matters how they get there. And as godly parents, we want our children to meet adulthood prepared to face and to understand a world that is degenerate and corrupt. And what we don't want is their knowledge to come by the school of hard knocks. One Gallup poll says this, 62% of teenagers consider homosexuality acceptable. Another piece of research says this, Generation Y was credited with spending 17 hours a week on the internet. But new research by social influence marketing platform CrowdTap indicates that millennials spend an average of 17.8 hours a day with different types of media. The American Association of Pediatrics research tells us that teenagers view an average of 3,000 marketing images or ads per day and over 40,000 per year. The National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism in 2013 did some research and found that 23% of young people aged 12 to 20 reported drinking alcohol in the past month. The Yankee Group did some research in 2006 and found that teens generated over $21 billion, that's billion with a B, for wireless carriers. The U.S. Department of Census would tell us this, that tonight 43% of American children will go to sleep in a fatherless home. Other research says that 28% of teens say that people in most churches are hypocrites. 47% of all U.S. teens say that morality is relative. And 61% of teens say that if a person is generally good, they will earn a place in heaven. You know, folks, it's not just a question of where our children are. But what are they doing, seeing, hearing, and experiencing in our own home? And folks, we can look at statistics all day long, and we as your pastors can research and warn, but the truth is, statistics are just that until it is your child and your home. The statistic can read 10%, 25, 65, but when it is your child for you, it becomes 100%. Are we as parents and grandparents discipling our children and giving them a desire for the things of God? Or are we living in a my way or the highway, rules-based environment that will eventually develop rebels? Are we touching their palate to develop a taste of God's blessing and leading in their lives? Or are we developing a taste for materialism and self-gratification? Tonight I want to look at Proverbs and see what it has to say about child rearing and our role as parents. And we'll look at one of the most claimed verses by Christian parents that is perhaps also one of the most misinterpreted verses, Proverbs 22:6. As we view this passage together, we'll do a word study that will help us understand the commitment and method of child training and then finish with the principle explained. So let's look at Proverbs 22:6. We see that it starts, train up a child. And folks, training is a commitment that will last at least 18 to 25 years. It is a commitment for us to do that. And you see this word child in verse 6 is interpreted this way, a boy or girl from age of infancy through adolescence, and it gives the sense of a tossing about or a wanderer. And so I ask, when we look at this, word that is used throughout the book of Proverbs, throughout the Old Testament, to describe a child, an adolescent or an infant through adolescence. But it's got this root meaning that would describe them as a wanderer or tossing about. How do you define adolescence? As a parent, when is a child ready to face the world around them on their own? Stop and think about this. How many 18-year-olds do you know that are still tossing about in their life? How about 21-year-olds? How about 25-year-olds? You get in the picture here, parents, as we are dealing with our children, it doesn't mean that we're going to have the apron strings tied tight and when adulthood comes that they can't learn a dependence away from mom and dad and a dependence on God as they become independent of our family structure as we know it. But it does mean that child training has a commitment that lasts well beyond the years of 18 years old. You know, it's amazing that 80% of college students in the U.S. changes their major at least once. On average, now parents, if you have students in college, do not have a heart attack over this. But on average, they change their major 3 times over their college career. And some of you are going, yes, I get to spend all that extra money on college tuition. But what are we trying to make the point of here? That it is a commitment that lasts well beyond 18 years old. Our children need us. They may need us in a different way than we are used to right now. If you have young children in the home, you're at a stage of life where discipline and rules are very important, and immediate obedience is one of the things that you're working on. But as you move in the stations of life from teenage and then into single adulthood, college years, those stations bring on different flavors of how you discipline and how you lead your children. You see, many parents think that once their children reach 16 to 18, that their job is complete. And that is the age when parents need to pour their hearts and minds into their child. It is at this time that the young person is beginning to set life standards and goals. They're not just looking for rules to govern them, but for the precepts behind those rules. If you have teenagers, be prepared for many discussions on the whys. You might have to do some attitude adjusting when the why questions come, but parents, it's important that the whys are taught. We can't just live in a my way or the highway home. They need parents who are willing to guide and to teach them. In order to keep our commitment to our children, we need to understand 2 things. Number one is this: there is no magic age. Turn to Galatians chapter 4. Galatians chapter 4, and we're going to look at an illustration that the Apostle Paul uses. And I'm not by any means trying to set a philosophy of exactly what our home should look like, but I am using an illustration that the Apostle Paul and these folks understood. But we need to understand there's no magic age. Society has taught us that 16 is the age of consent, 18 is the age of legality, and that 21 means that we can drink alcohol and party. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard 21-year-olds talking about, let's go to Las Vegas and party it up. But it's a common thing. But folks, we have to ask the question, how does this line up with the Proverbs definition of a child? I want to look at another definition of a child in this illustration that the Apostle Paul uses. Galatians chapter 4 and verse 1, we see, now I say that the heir, as long as he is a child, differeth nothing from a servant, though he be Lord of all, but is under tutors and governors until the time appointed of the father. Even so we, when we were children, were in bondage under the elements of the world. But when the fullness of the time was come, God sent forth his son, made of a woman, made under the law. This word child in verse 1 means an infant, a minor. It can mean simple-minded, and in a legal sense, a minor, or not yet of age. And here's the truth of this. As we look at this illustration, we can draw the truth from the illustration, and it is this: there is no magic accumulation of years. Maturity and adulthood are learned and taught. Some of our children take a little bit longer to learn it. Some of our children may be like you and I, and they're a little thick-headed, and they take a little more coaxing or helping along the way. But children are children, and we need to remember that. When my child's 16 years old, he or she's still a child. They still need your guidance. They still need your help. They still need your counsel. They still need your discipline. A child is a child. The parent is to prepare the child and help determine their readiness to be on their own. And that's the idea of the time appointed that Paul is using in this illustration. It's legal measures which gave the father the right to set the time of his son's coming of age. We look at our children, sometimes we need to ask the question, is my child ready to marry in high school? What decisions am I making to coax that along or to help them learn biblical discernment? Is my child ready to marry in college? You're going to face it, mom and dad. Many times our children go to college and that's where they find a mate. And it's an important choice. Is your child ready to go to college? Is your child focused on what God wants? Is your child ready to work in an environment with enemies to their Christian values and lifestyles? You see, every decision is important and will have an impact on our children's life and relationship with God. And our knowing God's heart and mind as parents is key to fulfilling this privileged commitment God has given us. You may say, well, we like to let him or her make their own decisions. We want them to learn to make good choices. You know, folks, that's okay under guidance and discipline. But I've observed this for 20 years now, and I would say it's pretty true in 99.9% of the cases. But the more a child is allowed to freely experience the mature adult life, the more he will despise his life when he becomes an adult and will long for the freedom of childhood. You see, our commitment requires a diligent, thoughtful direction and balance. What are we thinking about when we make choices for our children, when we help guide them through things like a college choice, things like the choice of friends, things like a choice of that person that they may like, things in the choices of that person who may be the one that they marry someday? We are here as their parents to help them and guide them through that. And it's evidence that there's still a child who may need some counsel and help, even into their adult years. The Romans understood this, and I want to read this. I usually don't read verbatim paragraphs, but I want you to hear what Barnes says about the Roman custom of Paul's day. And this is what Paul is referring to in this passage here in Galatians chapter 4. He says, the training of children was conducted by their parent with the emphasis, notice this, on moral rather than intellectual development. The most important virtues for a child to acquire were reverence for the gods, respect for the law, unquestioning and instant obedience to authority. Isn't that interesting? Truthfulness and self-reliance. Until the age of 7, boys and girls were taught by their mother to speak Latin correctly and to do elementary reading, writing, and arithmetic. At 7, a boy went on to a regular teacher and a girl remained her mother's constant companion. A girl's formal education was cut short because a girl married early, and there was much to learn from or learn of home management. From her mother, a girl learned to spin, weave, and sew. And we see some cultural differences here. And again, this isn't about setting forth a home philosophy. This is about a society that realized that children are children, that they need help up to a certain age. And you'll see this as we go on. A boy, on the other hand, was trained by his father. If his father was a farmer, he learned to plow, plant, and reap. If the father was a man of high position in Rome, his son stood beside him in the atrium when the callers were received so as to gain some practical knowledge of politics and affairs of state. The father trained the son in the use of weapons and military exercises, as well as in riding, swimming, wrestling, and boxing. No special ceremony marked a girl's passing into womanhood. But when a boy reached his majority, he discarded the crimson-bordered toga of a child and donned the pure white toga of a man. The year of a boy's coming of age varied somewhat on his physical and intellectual development, somewhat on his father's decision, and more perhaps on the time in which he lived. And Barnes goes on to explain about the time appointed that we see in verse 4. And he says this, until the time appointed of the father, he says, is the time fixed for his entering on the inheritance, the time when he chose to give him his portion of the property. The law with us fixes the age at 21, when a son shall be at liberty to manage for himself. Other countries have affixed other times, but still, the time when the son shall inherit the father's property must be fixed by the father himself if he is living, or may be fixed by his will if he is deceased. The son cannot claim the property when he comes of age. What are they seeing here? They're seeing that children develop at different stages, and they need help even into their adolescent and young adult years. Now, am I trying to keep a young person or a single at home too long? No. Am I advocating 36-year-old gamers who mooch off their parents' home and can't afford to live independently? No. Am I trying to make life as a single adult miserable? No. We look at this and we say, well, when does the command of Ephesians 6:1 begin to wane? Children, obey your parents. And by the way, folks, verse 2 should never wane. Honor thy father and thy mother in Ephesians chapter 6. That should never wane. But I think there's a simple answer. It's not always easily worked out. But the level of dependence that you have on your parents as you're moving from a child dependent upon your parents to an adult dependent upon God should determine the level of obedience. If honoring is a part of your habit, obedience will be an easier decision. Listen, young people, if you're living in your mom and dad's home and you're graduated from high school and they're paying for your college tuition and you're living there rent-free and you're enjoying the benefits of mom and dad helping you, there ought to be a heavy honoring and a very heavy consideration of obedience to your parents. I know it doesn't sound pretty, but it's part of that transition from adolescence to adulthood. And the more you allow your parents to help you, and parents, the more we help our young people, we don't hamper them, we don't enable them in their bad habits, but the more we help them transfer their dependence from us to God, the better off they will be. You see, this also requires devotion. Proverbs 22:6 says to train a child. And that's the Hebrew word hanok. Means to narrow, to dedicate, to initiate, or discipline, to disciple. It means to broadly instruct in accordance with the proper rules of conduct and behavior, which would include both principles and practices. It's the idea of dedicating. And that's the idea of setting aside for a specific use or work. Our children are ours as a stewardship from God. God has given them to us because He knows that we have specific gifts and abilities to help them develop into good, godly Christian people. And that word dedicate we find in 1 Kings 8 and 63, where Solomon is dedicating the temple. And the Bible says, "And Solomon offered a sacrifice of peace offerings, which he offered unto the Lord, 22,000 oxen and 120,000 sheep." So the king and all the children of Israel dedicated the house of the Lord. They set it apart for a specific use or work. How dedicated is our parenting? How dedicated are we to our children? When we have to deal with a problem or an issue, what do we do with it? Do we run from it? Do we hide from it? Or do we slay the giant? Do we kill the lion or the bear? It means that we initiate. And that's the idea of Philippians 1:6. He who hath begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. That beginning a work is instilling a taste for. It carries it through to completion. It's that idea of putting the date syrup on the palate of the mouth. How are we touching the palate of our children? Are we devoted to that? It means to narrow. It's the idea of tightening a noose, a drawing in. Do we take our instruction that we give to our children? And do we just simply bark commands? Do we simply just bark rules to them? Or is there a biblical philosophy behind them? And as they go from stage to stage, we're tightening the noose, in essence, on the instruction and the principle that they should understand behind the rule. It's an important thing. Don't stop too early, because our society says that a certain age is the age. Don't allow your children to believe that when they are a certain age, they have arrived. Spurgeon said this, "The voices of childhood echo throughout life. The first learned is generally the last forgotten." So child rearing is a commitment. But Proverbs 22 also gives us a method. And I'm going to touch on this briefly because we are out of time. Look at what it says. Train up a child in the way he should go. You see, pointing our children to the way of life is important. The root word of that word way is the idea of stringing a bow by stepping on it and bending it. And an improperly strung bow is powerless. You see, parents have a responsibility as child trainers to show the way and to direct the steps. And you cannot have one without the other. Without a way, the steps are meaningless. What would we think tonight if we walked into the lobby and someone were just standing in circles? And we walk up to them and we say, "Hey, what are you doing?" "Well, I'm going on a trip." "Really? Where are you going?" "I don't know, but I'm on a trip." You see, folks, the steps with no way is meaningless. Without steps, one can never go the way they ought. And so they work together. We need to understand the difference between ways and steps. And I'll give you these points. You can study the scriptures out. And we'll close with at least this one, understanding the difference between ways of steps. Ways are a course of life or a mode of action. A step is a step or a pace in the direction of the way. And steps are many times represented by the word path. And so we learn this truth as we study the book of Proverbs. In Proverbs 16 and verse 1 and 2, you can write this down, we see that ways are developed in the heart. You see, it's a little bit easier for our heart to see the way. The preparations of the heart and man and the answer of the tongue is from the Lord. All the ways of a man are clean in his own eyes, but the Lord weigheth the spirits. It's not always easy to devise the steps. You know, sometimes as God begins to work in our hearts, maybe work in the hearts of our children, we can see what we ought to do. Children, obey your parents. That's one that our children ought to be learning very, very early. But mom and dad, they don't always know the steps to that. And that begins in those early stages where you say, do not touch the oven. Do not touch the oven, right? What are we doing? That's a step in the way. And ways are developed in the heart. Ways are taught and steps are led. Proverbs 4, 11 and 12 give us light into that. The idea of taught in that verse is to flow as water or to point out. And that's important as you look at the illustration in those verses, because led means to tread, to string a bow. And as ways and steps are used together in the life of a child, it begins to etch a path and the results are found. It's the idea of giving them clear vision. So mom and dad, as you are teaching the ways and leading in the steps toward the way, what is that like? It is like water flowing. I remember as a little boy, one of the schools that I went to had a creek that ran beside it. And when I was young in elementary school, it was just a small creek. But it was a drainage creek. And years of water flowing through and runoff flowing through. I remember being in my mid-20s and driving down that road by that school and looking at that creek. And as the water led through that channel, it developed a big, big path. And folks, as we teach our children in the way, as we lead them in the steps of the way, and we teach them those things, it is like water treading out a path. Now, folks, it's a sobering thing when we think of what the writer says in chapter 23 and verse 26. My son, give me thine heart, and let thine eyes observe my ways. That is a sobering thought. We also see that man's responsibility is to see the way and God's responsibility is to direct the steps. Proverbs 3, 5 and 6. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not into thine own understanding. And here's that word way. In all thy ways acknowledge him. And what? He shall direct thy steps. So here's the truth, mom and dad. You're teaching and leading. When it comes to that course of life, the way, where God wants us to go, where He wants us to end up, how He wants us to live, what His sovereign plan is for each of us, we are taking care of those steps and trying to teach our children. And as parents, we have to trust in the Lord with all of our heart. Why? Because we need God's help. We can't lean into our understanding. And in all our ways, as we acknowledge Him, what is He going to do? He's going to direct our steps. What does that enable us to do as parents? Help direct the steps of our children. Lead them to the way. And finally, this, man is responsible to keep his way clean so that God can direct his steps. And I want to look at this verse finally and we'll be done. Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 26. It says, ponder the path of thy feet and let all thy ways be established. Here's what Kylan Delitzsch says about this passage. And again, that the word ponder is the idea of watching to clear, to smooth, to level, to make a path. And the admonition thus refers not to the careful consideration which measures the way leading to the goal which one wishes to reach, but to the preparation of the way by the removal of that which presents unhindered progress and makes the way insecure. So as we ponder our path, As we ponder our paths and the paths of our children as parents, we need to teach them to ponder their paths. As we are pondering their paths, what are we doing? We are clearing the way for them to follow in the way that God has for them. What are we doing as parents to ponder their paths? We have a tremendous responsibility in preparing our children for life. Not only are you to show them the way, but you are to lead them in the steps that God would have them take. And these are not the steps of your choosing or their choosing, but of God's choosing. And God help the parent who does not ponder the path of their feet and those of their children. In so doing, they will open their lives to the destruction that their own flesh will bring. Maybe another time we'll finish through this. There's an understanding of the responsibilities of the ways and steps, and we find in that dad's role and mom's role, even the child's role. But I want to leave you with this principle tonight. Proverbs 22:6 at the end says, "And when he is old, he will not depart from it." You know, many times we, as parents, look at our adult children and we struggle. Maybe they make choices that we wish they wouldn't make. A lot of times we treat this verse as a promise. This verse is a proverb. Let me explain. How many times have we given a soft answer that is supposed to turn away wrath, and it didn't? That's the proverb. Is there truth in it? Absolutely. But you see, there's an important factor that we have to understand in the Bible, and that is God has given us a free will. We've seen that since Genesis, right? And maybe you as a parent tonight, you have a burden for your children. We all have failures as parents. Maybe you have striven to do everything that you can to help your child. Maybe they're making a choice as an adult, maybe as a teenager, and you are burdened for them. Just because they have turned from what seems to be the way, or seem to have turned from the way, it doesn't mean that this truth cannot be fulfilled. We need to understand that God has given us a free will. We also need to understand this, that the word depart means to turn off from or avoid. It's the idea of impressions that do not easily wear off. And as we look at this and as we leave with this principle tonight, may it be an encouragement to us. May God help us. May it renew our commitment as parents to prayer if you have adult children, or to prayer and to action if you have children who are not adults. The idea is this: the teaching and leading that they have been given has worn trenches into their heart that will be unavoidable in their conscience, even when choosing to do wrong. And so, mom and dad, don't give up. You have a child that's struggling. Leading them and teaching them in the way and in their steps will wear a path into their heart and conscience that will not go away, even when they are old. And there is hope when we choose to do right as parents and develop that path and that way of life in our children. And may God help us as we seek to honor Him in raising our children.